Yes, we see.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to Leader of the Pack on the All Paws Pet Radio Network. I'm one of your hosts from Fort Worth, Texas. I am Susan Herbert, the Lone Star Dog Whisperer. And my co-host on a week-by-week basis is America's canine expert, Mark German.
Oh, boy. Week by week. Well, that's good then. There's still some hope there. And I just love that Norwegian accent of yours.
Oh, nice.
Heidi, Heidi, Heidi. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Because of you guys, we are tops on the BBS radio. So continue telling your friends about that. You can email us, call us, questions. Email us at pettalkatlive.com. Go check out what we do at americascanineacademy.net. See what Mark and Susan does. Susan?
Well, you know, as always, we are big supporters of Clear Conscious Pet, best on the market products. Love the super gravy.
I love the gravy.
Yes, we love
the gravy.
I
actually put it on some biscuits last night.
It's so crazy.
It was super biscuits.
And so our first guest is holistic nutritional expert and co-founder of Clear Conscious Pet, because we've decided we cannot leave out Amanda.
Correct.
Our guest is Anthony Benny, and he's going to tell us what the special of the week is.
Hello.
Welcome back, Anthony. Hey.
Hi, Anthony.
How are you guys doing?
Good. I just got to tell that, because Mike's on the line, I want to tell that story one more time about Cash, a dog that we had rescued. He was tied to a tree for a year, Mike, and the animal control finally came by and said they got it. The guy's got to get the dog in the house, or they're going to have to take it. And the owner of the dog said, "Well, just take it." So then he went to the shelter and stayed his time. He didn't get paroled, but we decided we'd go get him, and we took him. And this guy was skin and bones, wouldn't eat, tied to a tree for a year. Until we put super gravy on his kibble, he wouldn't eat a thing. We put super gravy on it. He's eating 6 cups a day. And I still think he needs more. But super gravy is just something that's awesome. And Anthony, you got any specials on that going on?
Well, again, thank you, Mark, for reiterating that great story. We are really excited to offer your listeners a special offer that will give them 20% off, but also we will give an additional 10% to H4. So it's a really great way to help with the veterans' causes and at the same time get a great deal on the product. But wait a minute, that's not all. If you go to our Facebook page, which is Clear Conscience Pet, just search Google Clear Conscience Pet Facebook or go to our website and link to it. If you like our Facebook page and then post up free sample, please, and give us a way to get back in contact with you so we can get a street address, we will send you a free sample packet. It's not a whole bag, but enough for a couple of days trial of super gravy, totally free of charge just for coming on and liking our Facebook page. But you got to get in there and like the page and then leave us a message, and then we promise we'll follow up with you. So you've got Leader 20, all in caps, L-E-A-D-E-R 20, for 20% off anything on Clear Conscience Pet website, including our great Christmas gift packs. So you might want to check those out. And that also will give some money for H4. You go to our Facebook page, which is Clear Conscience, C-O-N-S-C-I-E-N-C-E, Clear Conscience Pet. And like our Facebook page, we'll send you a free sample, whether you buy anything or not, if you'd like it. And then finally, just to make sure you have the most fun possible with Super Gravy, we have a new recipe page on our website at clearconsciencepet.com. And just it's right on our homepage. You can click to these recipes, and you can do so many fun things with the Super Gravy. You can make some of your own treats for the holidays that are super healthy, low carb, high protein, and none of the nonsense that's out there for so-called Christmas treats for dogs. This is hardcore, great nutrition that you will enjoy tremendously. So we've got the recipes, we've got Leader 20 on our shopping cart, and we have the free sample offer on Facebook. So it's a trifecta today.
Nice.
Awesome.
So we want people to come and visit us, and we'll take real good care of them.
Well, thank you so much, Anthony, for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me, as always. And I'll
awesome,
tell you what,
thank
you guys
you.
Have to try some of these recipes. We just sent you some new super gravy. Mark and Susan, I want you to try out this batter mix that Amanda and I created. It's amazing. We dipped some snow peas and some carrots in there and put it in the oven for about 15 minutes, and you wouldn't believe the way, you know, you'd think these were pieces of steak instead of pieces of carrot when you put this super gravy coating on it. So you get the best of both worlds. So you have to try these recipes. I'm psyched to hear how you guys like them.
Well, we
awesome,
will because we
will.
we have a dinner party coming up, and we're going to try those things.
I'll tell you what, you cut some sliders up and put them out on the tray for the appetizer.
I'm telling you.
With some cheese. Nobody will ever know the difference.
I hear you. I love them.
All right. Thank you so much, Anthony. We are going to move on really quick to our next guest. I'm so excited. Been looking forward to this all week. He is a fellow dog lover, a dog trainer, and an author. In fact, he also contributed a story to In Dogs We Trust, which is the book, of course, that we've been pushing every week. Guys, everybody buy a copy. Buy one as a Christmas gift for all of your friends and family. 100% of the proceeds will be given to charities. And you also receive a $10 gift certificate from Clear Conscious Pet, so you can get some super gravy. But he doesn't train dogs in the normal sense of the word. He doesn't do the sit, stay, roll over kind of stuff. Our next guest is Mike Ritland, and he's a former Navy SEAL, and he trains the most elite dogs in America. He's the founder and owner of Tricos International and the founder of Warrior Dog Foundation. And we are so happy to have you on today, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for the kind words, and thank you for having me.
Well, thanks, Mike, for being on with us. Our listeners are going to get a really get emotional over this segments that we're going to do with you, because what you do, I saw your 60-minute interview, and what you guys do is just, my mouth was wide open. So it was, I mean, I've trained a lot of dogs in my time and rehabilitated and dog whispered and anything else you want to call, but you guys, you bust butt down there doing what you guys do. It's awesome.
I do appreciate it.
Well, Mike, so tell everybody what you do. Well, not everybody's familiar with Tricos International, so tell us what you do.
Sure. So basically, we offer kind of a whole host of different services to a wide variety of different clients. There's kind of two different main streams in terms of the business and how it puts what we do out there. There's Tricos International, which is essentially a personal protection type dog service, and then there's Tricos Tactical, which is a essentially kind of as it sounds, a police, military, government entity or agency type of dog training and supplier. So we supply dogs for just about every different application, and have provided dogs to just about everybody also. So, those are two kind of disparately different applications in terms of the type of dog that we look for and the type of training that goes into it. Ultimately, we source very high quality dogs all over the world, including here in the States. But the gist of it is that we try to provide the exact fit for whatever type of application the client needs, and so there's kind of a wide variety of different things or applications and different type of dogs that we find. We do some breeding.
Mike, I'm gonna
a year that I'm sure we'll get into later in the program, but so that's certainly an application we do. Sometimes we hold some of the pups back for ourselves, and raise them up and train them from 3 days old. And sometimes we'll, sell puppies to the general public, depending on what's going on and what type of litter it is, et cetera, if it's, viable for good working homes, et cetera. And then last but certainly not least, I started the Warrior Dog Foundation, which retires former special operations working dogs from any SOF unit within the U.S. military. So it's not specific to any one branch, though with my ties to the Naval Special Warfare community, that's certainly kind of where the bulk of them come from. But it's open. We are a resource to any branch in terms of special operations forces go if they need to retire dogs. And so, you know, generally speaking, the type of dogs that we end up with are dogs that, from a character and temperament standpoint, aren't necessarily the first pick for rehoming to a normal living environment, or their injuries are such that it wouldn't be conducive to living in a regular environment either. So sometimes it's a combination of the two. But so we essentially provide a resource for those units to send dogs and retire dogs that you know, that have kind of some above and beyond necessities or needs that are tough for your average everyday citizen to be able to accommodate.
Now, you were a former Navy SEAL. Thank you for your service.
Oh, my pleasure.
I was a Navy corpsman.
Oh, good. Well, thank you.
I just wasn't a SEAL. I watched the SEALs at Disneyland. I mean, SeaWorld. But no, you guys are not only the SEALs are elite, because I obviously I knew a bunch of them, but these dogs are just unbelievable how you guys do this. How many volunteers or assistants do you use, Mike?
Right now we have three employees, basically, and myself that work full time, you know, here at the kennel. In terms of kind of the back end network support, there's a ton of people that are involved with administrative stuff and you know, PR and not advertising, but just kind of you know, the media and social media aspect of it. There are you know, a number of folks involved. So you know, it's certainly a group effort, and you know, it's you know, we couldn't do it without everybody involved, frankly. You know, everybody plays a vital role, and it's you know, it's been a great project and something that we all are very you know, proud to be a part of and take very, very personally and very seriously, and are happy to be involved with the dogs that we are.
Well, these dogs jump out of helicopters and airplanes, and I mean, it's just crazy what you guys have these dogs doing.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's unique. It's you know, I think a lot of people are, I guess, you know, from a national perspective, are pretty surprised, you know, to hear that we use dogs not only in our line of work, period, but also at the capacity that we do use them. And you know, I think that kind of the national spotlight was initially put on, you know, the use of canines and as it relates to special operations after the, you know, the Bin Laden raid in 2011, where they found out that there was a dog involved. And so from that point forward, there's been, you know, pretty enormous level of interest nationwide on the dogs, what type of dogs, how they're used, et cetera. And that was some of the motivation for writing Trident Canine Warriors, was that it was, you know, there was some people had come on different media outlets and gotten involved in some things that, you know, didn't really have necessarily the credibility to be doing so. And, you know, were putting some things out there that were grossly inaccurate. And so, you know, a combination of wanting to kind of set the record straight, but also just give your average American citizen kind of a 101 look into the use of canines in special operations, because it's something that is very important. They've played an enormous role since 9/11 in terms of our ability to operate at the capacity that we operate in, and you know, it's something that from my perspective was important that the country was at least aware of. You know, there's always a fine line of how much to talk about and how much to kind of scrub. And you know, I reviewed it along with several former teammates, you know, to try to ensure that there was nothing in there that was going above and beyond. And you know, I think we did a good job at making kind of a good balance, or a happy medium, if you will, enough information to let people understand the incredible nature and just how important these dogs are to us, but also being mindful of the fact that there are some security concerns in terms of what's put out there and to what level.
Now, Mike, you mentioned the word kennel earlier, but it's not really a kennel, so to speak, in the normal sense of the word, is it? How are you different? What's your training process?
It depends on where the dogs end up ultimately, but we do have a kennel facility, but I bend over backwards to remove the kennel aspect from the dogs' lives in terms of that being, such a predominant environment for their existence. Especially as it relates to the personal protection dogs, they spend very, very little time in the kennel, and they're incorporated into a family environment for months before they're delivered. Now, for some of the military and police-type working dogs, where that's the type of environment that they're going to be in, for their entire working capacity, it's certainly a little bit different, and we can be a little more flexible on that. But even with those dogs, there's just a ton of one-on-one time and attention that's paid to each and every dog, because from a psychological standpoint, it's kind of similar to general population of a prison. Dogs, a lot of dogs act very, very differently when they're in kennel environments, and whether it's losing weight or pacing incessantly or sucking their flanks or chasing their tails or any maniacal behavior that you see out of dogs when they're in a stressed environment or in an environment that's conducive to odd or abnormal behavior, it's counterproductive in terms of a working capacity. And because we're trying to get so much out of these dogs, we spend a lot of time taking them places and going to different training areas and doing a lot of things that I think would probably surprise some people. But we're not really a traditional kennel in terms of, by comparison to some of the other ones out there, though we do have a kennel facility to actually house all the dogs. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh. Yes, that's exactly what I wanted you to explain to folks, was I think that's a fantastic way of doing it. I see so many dogs that are just stuck in kennels until they get their daily walk, their 10 minutes outside. And we are called all the time in to fix dogs with kennel crazies and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to hear. And we have got to go to break really quick, but we are going to be right back. So please, everybody, stay with us, and we're going to hear more from Mike Ritland.
What you mean when you say they came from the wrong?
Attention all pet lovers! Do you love your furry pet? Well, I want to introduce to you Paws and Silk, the first all-natural silk-filled pet bedding and apparel line that helps improve your pet's overall health and wellness. Paws and Silk is made using luxurious long-stranded silk and all-natural breathable cotton. Each product will help keep your pet cool and comfortable all year long. Paws and Silk pet beds and coats will also work as a barrier against dust mites and other allergens. Not only are they fashionable, but they also don't take on your pet's odor. Better yet, they're even machine washable. So, folks, here's what I want you to do. Visit Paws and Silk website at pawsandsilk.com to learn more about Paws and Silk and their incredible products. That's PAWSNSILK.com. You can buy directly from the site, and they even ship all over North America. How easy is that? For more information, go to pawsandsilk.com or call their toll-free number, 877-678-7455.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy.
Yeah.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark. And we have
Mark.
Yes, he is. And we have a very special guest. I've been looking forward to this all week. We are talking to Mike Ritland. He is the owner of Trikos International and the founder of Warrior Dog Foundation. And he's been telling us about the phenomenal working dogs that are used in Afghanistan and Iraq and, gosh, Border Patrol and private security. These dogs, he is the one who trains these dogs. They're amazing what they do and the lives that they save. And so we thought it would be a great treat for everybody to hear him talk about, you know, what exactly he does and get a more in-depth description of what they do with these dogs. So, Mike, tell us, what kind of breeds are you typically working with?
Sure. For the, well, really across the board with very few exceptions, the Malinois, the Dutch Shepherd, and the German Shepherd are overwhelmingly the breeds that we use. And one question that I get asked a lot is, you know, why do you prefer those breeds? And frankly, there's not a preference towards those breeds. It's 100% that we have a very specific list of criteria that needs to be met for us to accept a dog and purchase a dog for
sharp teeth.
You know, for I'm sorry,
sharp teeth.
Sharp teeth. Yeah, absolutely. Or at least the ability to put them together pretty hard. But so anyway, there's a very very specific list of criteria that has to be met that we're looking for, and I'm happy to kind of run through that quick. It'd take a few minutes, but in terms of our selection test, those three breeds are the breeds that pass it the most frequently. It's certainly not to say that there aren't other breeds out there that could pass the test. I just haven't happened to actually come across any other breeds that did have everything that I was looking for at the level that I needed it to be to conduct the type of training that we do. So it's not a preference or a favoritism type thing to those three breeds. It's just what we need to do with the dogs. There's a pretty rough list of requirements that has to be met, and those are the dogs that fit the bill for us. So
like it's just like the SEALs.
It's the parallels between the human operators and the four-legged operators is almost uncanny, honestly. I mean, just about everything that we look for in a good dog is the same thing that has to be present in the human variety for them to do that type of work too. And so just like SEAL training or buds,
right.
The attrition rate for that is incredibly high. 75% to 80% fail or quit, going through SEAL training. So
mm-hmm.
it's not any better in terms of odds for the working dogs. We'll look at literally hundreds of dogs and find one or two that has everything that we're looking for. And sometimes we may look at a couple hundred dogs and not find a single one that we're willing to capable of passing the entire selection process. So the biggest thing the most challenging thing, when we do our selection test is just finding a dog that has it all. And one of the analogies I like to use is the LeBron James of the dog world. And the reason I use him is that, he is so well-rounded and he's well above average in every category. He can shoot three-pointers, he's a good free-throw shot, he's incredibly athletic, he can dunk, he's fast, he can pass, he can rebound. I mean, there's really no aspect of the game that he's not exceptional at, whereas, there's other players that are phenomenal three-point shots or, they can out-rebound just about everybody or pick any variety of basketball that's a quantifiable aspect to it, and they're very good at it. But there's very, very few that are fantastic at all of them. And so with the dogs that we look for, it's that same type of thing, is that each and every aspect of the working characteristics and traits that we try to find, they have to have an absolute off-the-chart reading of what it is that we're looking for. And so, you know, in terms of our selection test, you know, we basically look at four main categories, and that, you know, it's environmental stability / socialness, prey drive, hunt drive, and then true natural forward aggression. Those four categories, you know, again, are of the utmost importance. The dog has to have an extremely high level, you know, in every regard. So in terms of the environmental stability and sociability, you know, I need a dog that is supremely confident in every environment. So, you know, a dog that no matter where you take him, whether it's to a busy airport or, you know, four stories up on an open stairwell or, you know, a catwalk, dark rooms, slippery floors, you know, whether it's elevated or not, you know, there's no environment that's essentially spooks the dog. You know, he walks around with his head up, his chest out, tail up over his back, is just, you know, walks around like he owns the place no matter where that's at. If there's loud noises going off, you know, hustle and bustle, commotion, lots of people, crowds, et cetera, none of that seems to flap the dog. It has to have that level of confidence and that level of environmental comfort no matter where he goes. And the reason for that is that, you know, the austere nature in which we operate in, you know, those environments are incredibly chaotic. And so if a dog shuts down and gets a little bit nervous or sketched out, you know, by an elevated stairwell or something, then he's going to have a hard time rappelling or fast roping or, you know, going five stories up to, you know, to assault a target, et cetera, or going headfirst into a dark cave that's you know, tight spots, et cetera. So, you know, that's where that environmental stability translates to in an operational environment, is that if there's any environmental factor that essentially shuts the dog down, then he can't work for us, because if he's more worried about the environment than what his job is, you know, then he goes from an asset to a liability, which obviously we can't have.
Well, not only do these dogs jump out of airplanes and things, I mean, they sniff out bombs, drugs. They do. I mean, not only do you have to train them to jump out of an airplane, which I would never do. That it ain't crashing, so I'm not going to jump out of it, but you jump out of that with the dog, and then he goes down there and sniffs out the bombs to protect the troops.
Correct. From a detection standpoint, it's you know, there's explosive detection and human detection. So you know, there's multiple applications that they are incredibly valuable and also you know, very heavily used. So you know, moving along in the test, so to speak, the you know, the next phase is the sociability, which I lump in with environmental stability, because from my perspective, they do go hand in hand, and that it boils down to confidence. The type of dog that is, you know, worried about a stranger bumping into him or picking him up, is generally a dog that's a little bit thin-nerved and you know, maybe is a little lacking in confidence. You know, most people make the incorrect interpretation of body language in a dog, thinking that, you know, hair up or defensive behavior, showing teeth, growling, et cetera, that the dog is mean and super aggressive and is coming after me and whatever. And the reality of it is it's essentially peacock feathers and translates to, you know, the dog is worried about who I am and what I'm doing, and he's defensive about it. You know, he's proactively defensive. And so, you know, for what we're looking for in a dog, the dog has to be able to load into a helicopter at night, on night vision in the pitch black, with, you know, a number of other operators, you know, quote unquote strangers that maybe the dog's never been around. Maybe there's, you know, foreign counterparts or whatever. There's other people that have to be able to get in close proximity to the dog.
Hey, Mike.
Yep.
I need to interrupt you, and we'll get back to that, but we got to pay for this radio show.
You bet.
So
we're
going to be right back.
Commercial break, and we'll be right back in a few seconds.
What you mean when you say they came from the wrong side of town?
Treat your furry best friend with a clear conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. Enter the offer code RADIO at checkout and save 20% at clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
All right, folks, we're back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark, and we are talking with the owner of Trikos International, the man who trains the elite dogs of America, the dogs that we send to war, the dogs that we use to track drugs, all the dangerous jobs that they do. And I'm amazed, Mike, that you can train them to do so much. There's just basically nowhere that a dog can't go and be of help.
That's absolutely the case. You know, there's not really an environment that we operate in with one exception, which is underwater. You know, that we operate in where we can't or won't take the dogs with us. So, you know, to have them as a viable asset is, you know, it's hard to overstate their importance, honestly. It's just, you know, their effectiveness in combat has been proven time and time again, and there's you know, hundreds, well, I would say military wide there are thousands of soldiers that are here today because of the job that these dogs have done. And so, you know, for me it's just a dream come true to be able to continue to work with these dogs at the level that we do and in the capacity that we do. You know, it's just it's a great feeling and incredibly rewarding. So,
well, you were actually not just a Navy SEAL, but you were a Bud's instructor.
Correct.
Am I correct?
Yes, I was on active duty for a little over 12 years. In my last few years in the Navy, I was a SEAL instructor. So, you know, it gave me a very good perspective and kind of a unique look into the other side of the curtain, if you will, you know, in the selection process, which has absolutely benefited me moving forward into the canine aspect of the program. And that, you know, that it taught me a few things about, you know, having a strict set of standards and sticking to them and not, you know, not preemptively washing anybody out, because you're always surprised by, you know, by the performance of somebody when you really, you know, check their oil, if you will. You know, and some people will surprise you both ways. You know, some people, and dogs for that matter, that you didn't think had it in them absolutely do, and some people that you were almost positive had it in them and they absolutely didn't when they needed to. So, you know, it was a very good learning experience, and, you know, something that I'll always look fondly back on.
Which is easier, training a SEAL or training a SEAL canine?
I wouldn't say either one of them is easy.
You and I have talked offline, and we know that you're a dog lover, and we know that dogs tend to be who we gravitate toward.
Sure, it'd be impossible for me to say one is harder than the other. They're both difficult, and they're just so very similar, honestly, in that you're presented with the same set of challenges in both regards. So it's not, you know, there are so many more parallels than there are contrasts within, you know, training special operations soldiers and special operations working dogs. You know, they're doing the same mission. They're working together. They're cohabitating, you know, when they're not operating. You know, so the all the same challenges exist of injuries and finding the right dog, finding the right person, doing training at a very, very high level and using the methodology of train as you fight. And the more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in war type of thing. You know, we train very, very hard and very, very realistic on both fronts, whether it's dogs or humans. So it's,
can you train them to scuba dive?
No. Maybe you could. I don't think that you probably could. If somebody developed an apparatus that you could get a dog to scuba dive on, I'm confident that you could.
But there's no apparatus made for that.
Not that I'm aware of. To me, it would, it would take an awful lot, I think, to, to be able to facilitate that type of training and getting a dog to do that. I don't know that the risk would be worth the reward in terms of the time and resources spent to trying to get the dog to scuba dive. It'd make a great story and probably an even better movie, but I don't see that happening probably anytime soon.
Speaking of which, the Lone Survivor movie is coming out.
Yeah.
And that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to
it. Are you going to go see it?
For sure, yep.
All right, great.
Well, and so how do you train them to jump out of the planes and helicopters and stuff right there on your ranch? I mean, do you do it right there on your ranch? Do you have
a helicopter
there?
No, the time that I spent as an actual trainer, for one of the units, was when all of the more realistic air operations took place. Here at the ranch, it's pretty basic stuff. It's either sourcing dogs or running courses or things of that nature, which we've done in the past. But so the level of training that happens here, I think, is probably less than maybe you would expect in terms of the sexiness of military assets flying around or driving around or big groups of troops doing operations and stuff. I mean, we have run courses here where groups, would come out and we would conduct training here. However, most of what we do here is more on the foundational stuff and putting the legwork in early. The hardest thing, honestly, is the dog selection. Finding the right dogs and then doing the initial training. So. That's where, just like with anything, the foundation is, without question, it's probably the most important aspect, and frankly, it's the weakest link. You can't build a fantastic house on a weak foundation. So you have to put that time in early, and it's, some of it can be monotonous. It's consistency in training. It's reinforcing good behavior and making corrections to bad behavior or unwanted behavior, and it's just doing it over and over and over and over, and that's frankly one more parallel that exists between dogs and humans, and that the special operations guys spend most of their time doing things that would surprise most people, shooting on a flat range at 10, 15, 20, 25 yards over and over and over and over. It's creating that muscle memory and having the basic fundamentals down pat to a point where it becomes human nature or second nature. Uh-huh. It's more of an instinct and a reaction than it is actual training. And so, with the dogs, it's the same thing. It's laying that foundation and getting them to a level where it just becomes automatic.
This is so cool because we actually do like the opposite, because you train that, you want them to be aggressive. You mm-hmm. want that drive. You want the prey drive, the aggression, the just serious, intense dog. And that's what we fix. So,
yeah, we get paid to fix that kind of stuff.
Well, and it's tricky because there's two big points I would bring up to what we do and how we do it, is that we need a dog to have true natural forward aggression. And by that I mean, if I get in a bite suit and I push the dog and I get in his head and I put both physical and mental pressure on him, and then I get to the point where I know that he feels threatened, and my intent towards him is challenging, dominating, threatening, aggressive behavior. And I know now that he realizes that my intent to do harm to him is very real and it exists, and I'm coming after him. Once he's at that spot, then I essentially give him the choice. I say, either you're going to come fight me, or you're going to decide to live to fight another day. And very early in any breed of dog anywhere in the world does that choice exist, where he says, you know what, I'm coming after you, even given all of these circumstances. And it's counterintuitive to think that that's something that's a predominant behavior in any animal for that matter, or they wouldn't exist. You know, the lack of self-preservation. Yes.
Let's talk about aggression when we get back from break, because I have a couple of questions about aggression.
Sure.
So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
What you mean when you say they came from the wrong side of town?
As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Does your dog have muddy, dirty paws? Well, here's your answer. The Paw Wash cleans dog's paws fast and easy. Just insert your dog's paw and leg into the device and pump up and down. The Paw Wash's unique hourglass design creates a suction of power that pulls that dirt, mud, sand, or salt off the paw and leg, and it stays in the device. You can clean all four paws in a little over a minute with just one fill. For retail or online sales, go to www.thepawwash.com. That's www.thepawwash.com.
We're back. You're listening to Leader of the Pack with Susan and Mark, and we're talking to Mike Ritland. He trains the Warrior Dogs, and this has just been an amazing show, and I wish we had another hour because we have like a zillion questions. But Mark, what did you have? You wanted to ask about aggression.
Well, again, you were saying that's people call us and say my dog is aggressive and we have to go fix it, which we do, but on this case, on your hand, Mike, you're looking for that dog that wants to bite. Now, let's just say you found him and he's the most vicious dog, bitey-wise, obedient, trained dog. What happens when they retire, let's say?
When they retire, essentially one of two things happens. Either first and foremost, the dog is retired with his handler. And he, you know, carries out the rest of his life with the partner that he's had for a number of years, and all is great. In the other instance, if there's a situation where, you know, the handler is still on active duty and the dog is time to retire, but the human is not, he gets another dog and continues to operate, or he, you know, moves on and does something else and stays in the military, or whatever circumstance you can think of where the dog can't be retired to his handler or one of the guys in the unit. Then another group will take him, and you know, in this instance, the Warrior Dog Foundation is one of those. And so, sometimes the dogs are retired because they, you know, develop PTSD type issues or you know, sustain significant combat injuries and just can't go to a regular home because of, you know, medicine and therapy type stuff that needs to take place with the dog. So. You know, again, we're a resource for that as well. And so, you know, for me, because of my ties to the community, my love for dogs, my involvement in their training in so many different aspects, you know, to me, it's something that is excruciatingly important and something that I hold very, very dear to my heart, to be able to, you know, take some of these dogs and be able to provide for them the way that, without question, they deserve to be treated, you know, no different than the VA taking care of our troops coming back with all the same types of injuries. You know, to me, it's crucial and necessary to, you know, to be able to do that for the dogs. And the foundation essentially was created, you know, by necessity. It wasn't something that I ever, you know, started out thinking I should do this, or, you know, I want to become a part of this, or make, you know, make this out of thin air. so to speak. It was, you know, essentially there was a need for somewhere for these dogs to go, and I was approached and asked if I would take a couple of them, and I did, and very quickly I realized, you know, we need to streamline the support and figure out a way to get folks behind it and be able to establish something where we can get some help and you know, have people, you know, become a part of the organization and be able to go down the road and expand and be able to provide our services to every soft group, et cetera. And so it's been a humbling and overwhelming response ever since the 60 Minutes piece and people that get out there and help, and it's just been fantastic. I can't thank really the American people as a whole enough, because they've been incredibly generous and supportive and given us the ability to do what we do at the capacity that we're doing it. So it's been great.
Well, where can people go to donate if they want to help these dogs?
It's just warriordogfoundation.org is our website, and that has our mission statement and information on dogs and what we do and how we do it and et cetera. And there's ways to donate there, and we have a mailing address there. If people feel more comfortable, you know, donating, you know, goods as opposed to monetarily, that's certainly fine too. Very shortly, we'll have a list on our website of, you know, if you prefer to send goods or products of some sort. You know, here's the things that we use a lot of and that we go through a lot. And so, if somebody feels more comfortable doing that, here, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll have that list, you know, on our website. So that's the best way to go about helping the Warrior Dog Foundation. And again, that's warriordogfoundation.org.
And now they can also buy your book, which you mentioned earlier in the show, Trident Canine Warriors. And folks, that I have not read it, but I can't wait to read it now. It went to bestseller status in a week, didn't it?
Correct. You know, the first week it was on the list. The second week we got to the number four spot. So
awesome.
And then it was on for a few more weeks after that. I've been very, very blessed in the success of the book, and it's been great. And we were actually approached by Scholastic to do a young adult version, which just came out at the very end of October, which is the, you know, 9 to 15-year-old range. It's essentially a rewrite of Trident Canine Warriors. It's just called Navy SEAL Dogs, but it's rewritten, same manuscript, but rewritten for that age range.
Nice.
And kind of addressing, you know, the types of challenges that kids in that age range face, similarly to what I did, frankly, you know, as a young teenager growing up. And so that's there's essentially two books out that you know, that are in that same category. And then I'm working on a training book as we speak that'll hopefully be out towards the end of 2014. Hopefully it'll be out a year from now. So
awesome. Well, I know we're going to be getting close to time running out here, but I have to ask this question. It's the one question that we cannot end the show until I ask it. So early on the show, Mark said that he would never jump out of a plane. Well, I'm one of those daredevils that loves to do this kind of stuff, and I want to skydive out of a plane with a dog.
Okay.
Now, when, of course, you and I talked last week about Mark and I coming up and watching you do your thing, because you're not that far away from us. But so while I'm there, I want to jump out of a plane with one of the dogs. I want Mark to be dressed in one of them padded suits, and I want to release
what?
The dog to chase down Mark.
No, you'll see how fast I can run. No, I'll turn around and take the dog. I'll take on the dog. You know, it's fight, flight, avoid, or submit. So I'm just going to turn around and say, bring it on. Let's go.
All right.
Hey, Mike, how many times have you been bitten?
Numerous. you know, I guess I haven't kept track. I mean, I've only been bit seriously a few times. The most recent, I mean, I haven't been bit. It's been over a year since I've been bit bad. I mean, I get small punctures or, nothing super serious on a regular basis. But, to have a dog, legitimately come after you, it's only happened a handful of times. But the last time was probably the worst, honestly, where my wrist was actually broken from him grabbing me. So
I've been there. I've done that.
But,
yeah, we take the dogs and fix the dogs that are already like you've trained the dogs to be, and then we're supposed to go fix it, which, and they're not that trained, but, or yeah, like you're
that aggressive.
Right.
Sure. There's a pretty stark contrast between dogs who have become a problem in somebody's household versus, what we're trying to accomplish. And, and again, most of the quote unquote problem dogs that I see, which is, probably not to the same level in terms of volume that you guys see, but I do run across them a fair bit just because of where we're at and what we do it just by default. A lot of people say, hey, I've got this really aggressive dog, it's too much, can you do something with it or whatever? So I do see them on a fairly regular basis, but generally speaking, those are our dogs that in terms of communication, have
just we can't wait to get up to your ranch, see the dog, see what you do.
Yeah.
Susan.
Yeah, well, we are out of time, unfortunately, because we could talk forever, but
okay.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on. I hope you will join us in the future to talk some more, and I hope you will have that padded suit ready for Mark when we get there.
Can I say one thing real quick?
I have
to do just a quick respect shout-out to my social media director, Nicole Stokes, out in California. She's done a stand-up job getting the word out for the foundation and for Tricos, and, she's volunteered just a truckload of her time, and I just wanted to publicly say thank you. She's been fantastic.
Thank you, Nicole. Hey,
thank you, Nicole.
I see her on Twitter, so hi, Nicole.
All right, we got a commercial to tape.
Yeah, we've got to go. Everybody, remember, you can email us. Thanks for joining us, and have a great week.